feels like winning somehow makes us hungrier.
The dynasty continues for New York.
At this point, we've kind of cemented ourselves as like a quote-unquote dynasty or whatever. Really want to keep pushing that and just see how far we can really go.
When you win, it's like, oh, this is a drug. I want to do this more. I think everyone on this team now understands that drive.
What I love about dynasties is somebody has to knock them off.
DC, they've been chomping at the bit for so long.
MVP Babbitt in Boston, are you serious?
Minnesota played like a first-place team on the road.
Salt Lake's got really athletic, speedy guys.
This O-line has been one of the easiest O-lines I've ever been a part of.
We're not here to get a moral victory. We're going to come out swinging. That's our mindset.
You know, this is why we do what we do, right?
And the Salt Lake Tread winning in overtime.
And who else but Alex Atkins rips down
Ben
the ball.
Vignette says this is
He's
my
absolutely
disc.
Gassed. He's sucking cans of oxygen.
We kind of embraced the villain role. Everyone says we're the villain, so we got to just kind of roll with that.
To the end zone for the lead. Williams makes the catch. Are you not entertained?
New York.
See you next time.
Welcome back. It's Swing Pass, a little bit of technical difficulty, so we will be without video this week, but I am Adam Ruffner, and I am joined, as always, by Cameron Brock, and we've got another slate of late-breaking New York Empire news. I hope you're not too tired of the two-time reigning champs, as we have more MVP departures from them, as news coming out this week from Evan Lepler that the 2022 MVP Ryan Osgar, while under contract and signed with the Empire for 2024, will be taking a sabbatical from the team for the time being. This news comes just 16 plus days out from the start of the 2024 season. Cameron, with this news coupled with news last week that 2023 MVP Jeff Babbitt would not be coming back to New York and would be instead signing with interdivisional rival Boston, as well as the news earlier this offseason that other offensive mainstay John Lithgow would not be returning and would instead be signing with Chicago in the Central Division, the Empire, bringing a 30-game winning streak into the new season, are now missing 3/7 of their starting offense. And while this team we know is still stacked with talent and depth, we are now at the point where these questions and these departures are really starting to mount. So I've got to ask you, what is your take heading into this start of the season and this New York team that suddenly went from being the most dominant force this league has ever seen to a unit with some trepidation and some things to figure out heading into the new year?
Yeah, I mean, of all the departures that we've heard about so far, I think this one is the most impactful. We saw in the DC playoff game against New York this past season that even without Babbitt out there on offense, they can put up literally the best offensive performance that this league has ever seen. However, a lot of that runs through Ryan Osgar, where we could sub, you know, where the New York Empire could sub in Vignette for Jeff Babbitt on offense and see just insane production from Vignette. I don't know that there's somebody, not just on the Empire roster, but maybe on any roster, where you could sub in for Ryan Osgar and expect them to do similar things or put up similar numbers or have a similar effect on the game. I just don't think that person exists. So I don't know who goes in and fills that spot. Is this where Liam Haberfield fits in? Of course, he'll be new to the team and, you know, maybe trying to figure out what exactly his role looks like. We do know he does have great deep throws, which is something that Ryan Osgar has been, you know, known for over the past few years. But there is a lot of uncertainty now, and where I was still pretty confident that New York is the favorite without Jeff Babbitt, combining that with the loss of Ryan Osgar, combining that thinking about the fact that they're only going to have 4 out of 7 people returning to that O-line. They're down a coach from last year. They're also down Ben Katz, who maybe doesn't have quite the draw as a name like Ryan Osgar or Jeff Babbitt, but was an important part of that team. I don't know. I do have a lot of questions. And I think my biggest question actually right now is how many games is he going to miss? Because the door is open for him to come back, whereas Jeff Babbitt is gone. He's not coming back to that door. But Ryan Osgar, you know, this could be all season, or we could see that he gets that itch after a couple of games to come back.
Yeah, as he said in Lepler's piece again on watchufa.com, if you haven't already, go and read that. He said he reserves the right to regret his decision and return at any time, which, kind of knowing Asghar a little bit, could literally mean later this week after this initial news kind of washes into the public and he might start to doubt some of it. But I think that this is at least like a half season. I mean, you are also somebody who once retired once upon a time and kind of unretired very quickly to come back to the field. There's a certain competitive gene that exists in guys like you and Asghar and stuff where, you know, it's a little bit more understandable in the abstract. And then you start to see your friends losing games on the team that you've participated with for multiple years. And it just hits a little closer to home, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much exactly what happened to me. Like, a little bit of a peek under the hood for my decision. My decision was a little different, so I'll be curious. I was not retiring due to burnout. My wife and I, you know, we wanted to pursue foster care, and I thought that that would just need a lot of my time. And then we actually found out we were pregnant and decided maybe going into foster care while we already had a kid who had just turned one, and then we're about to have two under two, probably wasn't the best time to go into foster care. So I came back, and the moment where I knew I wanted to come back for sure, where I wanted to broach that subject with the team, was their first away game. They had a home game against Detroit to open the season. The next day they were on the road in Chicago, and watching that game in Chicago and seeing the team just look so lost, and look so uncomfortable with so many new pieces, it was tearing me apart. I was literally tearing up at my computer as I was watching the stream for the game, thinking about how much I wanted to be out there. So maybe that happens with Ryan Asghar. Maybe he sits, I would assume he would still be keeping tabs on the Empire, watching their games, and maybe he sees them struggling offensively. Maybe he sees some things he wish he could be out there to help fix, and maybe that draws him back in. On the other hand, if he really is burnt out, maybe he just needs some time. Maybe it takes a full season. I don't know. We did talk pre-show about their schedule at the beginning of the season. So I think maybe talking about that a little bit and how, you know, there's no DC games early in the season. So maybe when that first DC matchup comes up, maybe that's what brings him back.
Yeah, well, and we can get maybe more into the logistics and what it means. I kind of wanted to spare a few moments to talk about the legacy that he established in just three seasons in New York. I mean, this is a three-time consecutive first-team All-UFA member. He has the most assists over the last three seasons, the second-most total yards, and the third-most total hucks. That's 225 total assists in 3 years. He's led the league in two of the last 3 years. Over 20,000, excuse me, total yards and 77 hucks at an 81% completion rate on his deep throws. That number is the best among the 30 odd players with at least 37 hucks completed over the last 3 years. The only player really within his stratosphere of deep ball precision is Jordan Kerr, who is completing at 85%, which I think at like 35 total hucks. So like under half of Asghar's volume, much more of a select sharpshooter from deep. I mean, suffice it to say, they're just, in my own anecdotal experience and from watching years of film in this league, there hasn't been an offensive player better calibrated for the system that they play in than Ryan Asghar the past three seasons in New York. Again, this team had the ability to swap over an MVP in Benyat to defense because they had the kind of building blocks, and namely Asghar, who was just, again, like a video game player level of production and efficiency. You just don't see these kinds of numbers together. I mean, he averaged 5.4 assists, 2.5 goals, 30 completions, almost 500 total yards a game, and he missed three starts in 3 years for a team that went to the final game of every single season. It's just that kind of consistency, that kind of raw production, let alone just the simplicity with which he does it. I mean, the aestheticness of Asghar throws kind of go without question. It's again, it's one of those things where we can stack up all the numbers kind of like we did with Babbitt, And we can talk about how this New York team loses last year's assists leader and goals leader and the past two MVPs. But like the cultural impact is again kind of where my mind gets back to a little bit. Like it, I don't think that there's a lack of connection between this happening the week after Babbitt doesn't come back to the team. I don't think those events are disassociated per se. And so, you know, it starts to make me wonder, you know, what's going on in Denmark, so to speak? You know, what's happening in the Gilded Empire? They're going to be without a little bit this year.
Yeah, and you kind of wonder, what does this mean for the rest of the people that are still on that line too? Like, do we just see an increase in touches for Jack Williams? Does he kind of become the guy who things run through a little bit more? And Jack Williams, you know, we've talked for, this has been talked about for years. Like, how has this guy not won an MVP? He's kind of surrounded by these players on his team who have won MVP awards. And we all consider him to be as talented as those guys are. So maybe that's what happens this year. Maybe he takes on a bigger role. And maybe it starts to feel like the offense flows through Jack Williams instead of really feeling like the offense is always flowing through Ryan Oskar.
Well, to be fair, I think in the playoffs especially, and in a lot of other times and key moments and stuff, the offense has worked through Jack Williams in those clutch moments. I mean, the whole kind of aura around playoff Jack, which New York players themselves kind of distance from because they're like, that's how he is on every single possession for most of our offense. So, you know, so I think that what Oskar did, though, he was like the super cannon on top. Because Williams predates Oskar. You know, Williams won his first title with Yacht and Babbitt and company in 2019 during New York's first undefeated season as a franchise. And Oskar arrived in 2021. So I think there is a more like baseline foundation of Williams being a pillar in that offense. But Oskar pushed them into this, you know, he had the like Super Saiyan ability, that next level of just, oh, and now we can attack from any range on the field. You know, I think what Williams is so good at is providing that what we often talk about as like balance of attack, kind of diversity of approach. He can work it small. He can play make an open field. But what Oskar did was sort of elevate the level of everything around him, right? Like Williams does that too, but something about Oskar's range, his sort of penchant for that killer blow sort of throw, it works so well in balance. Again, I think one of the things that we've struggled to even articulate is how well these stars played off of each other. It's one thing to get a whole bunch of talent in a room, and then it's another thing to kind of balance it all together. And New York has done such a great job of that over the past several seasons. And now it's like, finally, we can start to question, well, can they continue to do that with changing lineups and rotations now?
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm almost waiting for like the next announcement of who's not coming back. It feels like we've had a steady feed of like we went from coach to, you know, maybe Babbitt and Katz aren't back to, okay, Babbitt's definitely not back to now Oskar might not be back. Like it almost feels like there's going to be another domino falling, and it's hard not to think like that when all this news just seems to be trickling in at the rate that it's trickling in at. Now, we are only, 16 days as of this recording from, you know, opening polls. So we don't have a lot more time before the season starts, but it kind of, at this point, I'm wondering, like, is this the end, or is there more trickling out later?
Okay, so let's balance it a little bit. Let's go through the list of the actual losses, because you omitted one that I think is getting lost in so much of this other MVP shuffle.
Oh, yeah, I did. Ben, you're right.
Who's been phenomenal for their defense and just producing blocks and some of the most idiosyncratic spaces on the field. Let's talk about, so New York, their departures are one of their head coaches in Charlie Hoppus, John Lithgow earlier this offseason, and now back-to-back weeks of the last two MVPs in Jeff Babbitt and Ryan Oskar, as well as just the omitted re-signing, or lack thereof, I should say, of Ben Katz, who was an all-star in 2019 for this team, one of the franchise's leader in takeaways, and just a player's player, right? Like, he's one of those guys who might not always get kind of the top-down coverage, but if you talk with opponents about who had an effect on the game, Katz is probably one of the five names who always seems to get mentioned, especially in bigger matchups. Those are the departures. And now let's talk about the beginning of their schedule, New York's, that is. So the first five games are hosting Montreal, at Atlanta, at Boston, the first of the Babbitt matchups on May 17th, at Montreal, and then hosting Philly. And as you mentioned earlier in this podcast, there will not be a DC game in the beginning part of this New York schedule, which is a hell of a thing for this Breeze team to have to swallow after multiple seasons in a row getting New York in one of their first two games, often starting the season drawing the Empire. You know, for all the times in which New York has looked vulnerable over the last several seasons, DC, their closest rival, doesn't get a shot at them until much later in the calendar. And that's the truest sports irony I think there is as far as scheduling goes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, they're definitely without Jeff Babbitt. They are going to be without Ryan Osgar. I mean, I would say for at least some period of time. I don't think his burnout is going to suddenly subside in 16 days. And also just the timing of this, right? Like, if you were not absolutely sure that you needed to take some amount of time off, I don't think this announcement gets made, right? Like, the fact that this announcement came out this close to the season starting, like, it would be, in my mind, just hilariously dumb for him to, like, somehow realize in 16 days where there's no real competition, you know what? No, I'm not burnt out, actually, right? I feel like he's going to miss some amount of time. Now, is that a game? Is that two games? I don't know. But yeah, you're right. It's hilarious that they don't actually face DC at the beginning. Their first game is against the team who was, you know, one of two winless teams last year across the league. So we're, you know, if there's a time for them to, like, get adjusted to maybe what life sans Babbitt and Osgar looks like, starting off with a team who definitely had a lot of issues last year competing in games, is probably a great way to start. But, you know, if he's not back by that Philly game, like I've said this before, like, I don't necessarily trust Philly over the course of a whole season yet, because we've just seen too much up and down with them. But in a single game sample size, like, I was on the record weeks ago that I thought the first team to knock off New York before we knew about these departures was going to be Philly. And what do you know? Philly might be playing without Babbitt and without Osgar. So maybe that's what happens. But that Atlanta game is super scary if I'm New York. You're not going to have a lot of time to figure things out without Osgar, without Lithia, without Babbitt on the O-line together, and having to go against a team that I think we both agree is a top, like, 4-6 team in this league. Like, they have, I think, a great chance to make the championship week and to make some noise. So I don't know, that I'm going to have that game circled now way more than I even did before, because that could be that first loss.
Yeah. This is the end of kind of my doubt of New York, because as you've been talking, I've just been looking over New York's existing roster still. And this is something we talked about pre-show too. Despite these losses, despite now the newfound doubts, despite, you know, the questions, is something going on with their culture, et cetera, you know, the empire in disrepair, Rome is falling, is the 30-game winning streak in jeopardy? This team still looks like the odds-on favorite to win the 2024 title. Like, it just does. Like, they still brought in Haberfield, who looked like, if you were going to have to replace an Osgar type of player with another dynamic offensive force, Haberfield might be one of the handful of guys who could imitate a similar kind of production line. And there's still Jack Williams, there's still Benyat, there's still Elliott and Oliver Chartok, the latter of whom, the bigger, younger brother, really looks poised to become a breakout star in not too short of order. They've still got Solomon Ruschmeier Bailey anchoring everything as one of the best pivot handlers. Their defense is still going to be probably top two, three at the outstretches. I mean, they're returning the reigning defensive player of the year in Antoine Davis. Breton Tan is somebody that everyone raves about as being maybe the best kind of prototype defender on the team. John Randolph's still there. He could be a defensive player of the year candidate. The Dross are coming back. Like, this team is still loaded at every single position you would need to make a deep playoff push. And I just wonder if this gives them sort of the coal in the furnace that they needed. If none of this drama hadn't unfolded, would they have maybe finally gotten undisciplined or something? Like, does this sort of reinvigorate the reigning champs almost? I really liked Matt Armour from Austin replied to one of the league's posts that, oh no, we're scripting the events already. We didn't need a redemptive arc for New York. he was saying that on Twitter, and it's just like, it's starting to feel that way. It's like, of all the teams to not give sort of some poster material or locker room inspiration to, it was sort of New York, and now they've got it in spades, you know?
Yeah, and I think, like, going into this season, if they returned to the same roster, I think we would have felt very comfortable saying, well, New York's going to repeat. Like, there's no reason to believe they won't. If you had to give me New York at the field, you take New York. And then, you know, they start to lose a coach, they lose Lithial, they lose Babbitt. After all these things, here's the thing. If you told me right now I needed to pick somebody to win this year's title, I'm still picking New York. Now, do I have the confidence level that that's going to happen that I would have had a month ago? Definitely not. Do I still think that they have the talent on both offense and defense to make that happen? 100%. And, you know, last year, their offense was great. They weren't quite as great statistically as they were the year before, but, you know, we can look at polling rules and how that affected offenses, and you could argue that they performed similarly given the new rules, right? But defensively, they were so good. Now, they are going to have to steal some people from defense to, like, fill these shoes on offense, but they do still have quite a bit of defensive depth. So I think especially downfield, their defense is, for my money, the best in the league. Losing someone like Ben Katz in the handler space, I do think is something that can't be, you know, stated enough. Like, the almost like prophetic way he played defense, it's like he knew what the guys in the handler set wanted to do before they did. And that's just like kind of the magic of Ben Katz. Like, if you were to put the New York Empire roster up from last year and just physically took a look at all of them, Ben Katz might be your last pick. But when you factor in that guy's brain, he's kind of on another level. So I think they're still fine defensively. They're still going to be a top, like you said, probably two or three unit, if not the top unit.
Probably the top unit. They're adding in Connor Russell as well from the Carolina Flyers. He's been a really good big defender. So you were saying that they're the best deep defense in the league. Numbers say that they are the second most difficult huck defense in the league, just trailing Colorado. But I think, to your point, the numbers there might belie the real truth of New York has the best defense, deep defense in the league, and they're adding in another great big defender who can help downfield in Connor Russell, and who's also pretty good in handler space. He's got a lot of mobility for a big and can work in some of those serpentine spaces that handlers love so well. And to your point about losing Katz, it's like, yes, to everything that you are saying about Ben Katz, yes, 100% agree. But New York has arguably the two best handler defenders outside of him too, in John Randolph and Breton Tan. Like, they kind of go from being absolutely formidable in the handler backfield to being incredible. And they still got Josue Aloro, who's a almost world's level player. Like, the New York's defense is going to be fine. They're going to be fine.
Yeah, they will be fine. But, you know, it's just one of those things where you kind of wonder how many chinks in the armor can they take before we start to see some real potential for other teams to do damage. And four fairly notable players off of their roster. People are going to have to shuffle around. They do have a couple of additions that I think are nice, but you know, that roster consistency from year to year is going to be a little bit down. And, you know, one thing New York really never had to deal with over the past few years, is kind of having somebody on deck to be like a fill-in on offense, because they all show up to all their games, right? Ben Yacht, after being, you know, Ben Yacht and Jeff Babbitt were kind of like the fill-in pieces, right? Like they were the eighth person over the past few seasons. But they just have such consistency in who shows up to games that they haven't had to worry about prepping a ton of other people to play on that line. You know, in Indy, we have a guy named Ben Landry, who is like, he's our fill-in guy. And it seems like every week we are missing someone. So despite the fact that Ben Landry is like a guy who fills in on offense for us, he ends up playing more than half the games on offense, it seems like, because we're always missing somebody. They don't have that problem in New York. They don't have a bunch of people trained up to like go out there and perform for 6, 7, 8, 12 games offensively. So I do wonder what that looks like when you're putting, you know, multiple new players in kind of that pressure situation where, like, in New York, you're expected to perform at a certain level at this point. I think they have guys that can do it, but I do anticipate still a little bit of an adjustment period as, you know, those new players kind of work into and become comfortable with their new roles.
Well, and I think one of the things that New York has sacrificed a little bit over the past several seasons in pursuing perfection in their record is the chance of development. I think that they exist in such rarefied air that there isn't really a whole bunch of opportunity to crack the rotation if you're a young and upcoming individual. Obviously, Oliver Chartok and some other examples are there. Like, this team can develop young talent. I'm not trying to say that. They just haven't had to, really. Like, they're sort of the Los Angeles Lakers. They bring in, from almost outside markets, the talent that they need. I mean, Ben Yacht played for Minnesota before. Jack Williams played with Carolina. Ryan Osgar, also from Minnesota. Really continuing the sports tradition outside of even Ultimate Frisbee of Minnesota stars really finding their championship successes outside of that state. I say that as somebody who grew up in Minnesota. You know, New York has always been able to import talent. They never really had to develop it. And so it's one of the questions that I think we've even posed on this show. What sort of is the window for this championship run and this dynasty formation, given that there isn't necessarily a pipeline that's replenishing all the time, kind of like there is maybe in Carolina or the Bays or even DC to a certain extent. I think we've seen a couple iterations of different DC cores that have sort of carried on. New York has sort of found their success with this current one, and there isn't really a notion of what comes next. So I think that's going to be something to really keep an eye on for New York. And I think aside from that, it just comes down to the sort of like almost, and I don't want to get too far into this, the like spiritual element or like the intimidation factor that New York has brought. Like, you were kind of talking about how teams are going to approach New York this season. And I think, as we saw last year in the championship weekend matches, New York did such a good job of jumping on teams in the biggest games that they sort of blew things out of focus almost from the get-go. And I wonder if these roster losses and the churn and just sort of the different presentation of the Empire, if that allows opponents to have more of a foothold and just challenging them. You know, I think it's been David versus Goliath, obviously, for a few seasons now, but it's been so overpowering that there's no notion of the upset almost happening in a lot of these matchups. I think this is going to feel a little bit more like 2019 New York, where they still went undefeated. They were still a dominant all-time team, but there were some close calls, man. There were a lot of slim results that year.
Yeah, I was a part of one of those slim results. They beat us by 2 in the semifinal. And they had, I think, multiple games in overtime that year, several games within 2 goals throughout the season. So, I don't know. I think, if anything, maybe some teams that don't go in with confidence against them, maybe they go in with a little bit more confidence, thinking like, hey, we can do it. Because you're right, like, the intimidation factor is certainly lessened when you take 2 players like Babbitt and Osgar with the caliber that they are off the field. Like, while we would all like to think that, no, everybody in this league is like super confident in their abilities and, you know, they can overcome that stuff. I mean, we know that's not the case. It's not the case across any professional or semi-professional sports. Like, you're going to have players who just have that wall, right? That mental wall where they just feel like, man, we can't do this. As far as who's going to replenish their roster, you know, one day, we already know the answer to that. The Minnesota Wind Chill will gladly send their best players over to New York. Maybe Will Brandt is the next one to go over there. I don't know. You know, Ryan Osgar and Ben Yacht were with Minnesota before heading over there and deciding to become, you know, some of the best players that this league has ever seen. While both were very good players in Minnesota, when they got to New York, it was just like another level was unlocked. So I don't know. You're right. They've had a lot of talent that's come in from other places. Jack Williams, another notable, you know, player who has come from somewhere else where they previously were a very good player, having been in Carolina. So it kind of seems like maybe, as you talked about, where do they get the talent from? Well, look at their players. Antoine Davis, another guy who has come in, not growing up in the New York system, but coming in after being in a couple other places. So I think they have a way to attract talent from other locations. And I would assume that they will continue to do so because it's clearly working. Grant Linsley was on that 2019 team, another guy who played, you know, in San Francisco and Minnesota before being in New York. So,
that's right.
Yeah, it seems like they just say, hey, you seem like you're pretty good. I know you don't play in New York, but how would you like to? And it seems like a lot of those answers have been yes so far. But the most exciting part about all this news is that it makes the team at the top just feel a little bit more vulnerable.
And that was the word I was going to use. That's exactly what
I was
thinking.
It's exciting. It doesn't mean that they're going to lose. It doesn't mean that they're not going to still make a run at the title. But it does give you this feeling that it's a little bit more possible now that we might be seeing some other teams knock them off. And I, for one, will be glued to every Empire game until that happens, because that's been a question kind of on all of our minds. When will it happen? And it feels more like an inevitability that they will lose a game now than a possibility. So I'm excited. Can't wait.
Well, New York will get a chance to extend their winning streak to a league record 31 games again on Saturday, April 27th. That is opening weekend against Montreal, who did not win a game in 2023. Had to notate that. But it is feeling like there is more of a vulnerability with the Empire than we have seen in a few years. And we will obviously continue to monitor that. But next week, we're going to get into some more broad coverage. I know it's been a lot of Empire news of late, but can you really blame us? It's been two MVP departures, after all. Next week, though, Cam and I, as well as a special guest, will get into broader season preview type of content, talking about all four divisions, MVP prospects, really getting into the last push as we, again, as we've iterated a few times on the show, are just 16 days out from the start of the 2024 UFA season on Friday, April 26th. You know, we're getting excited. I hope you are too. We'll talk to you soon. Bye now.